There we go. So, Layla, are you going to count it again and make sure there's two of us here? How many do we need? Five?
So I believe that's Commissioner Bacon with the phone number there, I believe.
Commissioner Bacon said she was on the phone and she'll be there in just a moment. You've got David and I. That's two. How many in the room?
There's two.
But Commissioner Bacon is on the phone.
So that's five.
That is
Yeah,
five.
if she's on the phone, that's five.
We're not hearing her, but we're going to kind of hope that's her.
Well, I recognize the number.
It's me. I'm here.
Yep.
That makes five.
Good morning.
Five.
Thanks for
Okay.
joining
Mark
us.
is the designee for the mayor of Langley.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, great.
So we're
Mark,
good.
good morning.
Good morning, everybody. Mayor Horseman is here as well, and she's just coming online now.
Super. Well, we've got a quorum for sure then. Not a problem. All right. We're going to start out with I did call to order if you didn't hear it, but did everybody get a chance to read through the meetings for from October or the minutes from October 25th? If so, I'd like somebody to move approval.
So moved.
Motion's been made by Blaine Oborne. Is do I hear a second? Oh, hello.
Hi.
How
I'm
are
sitting here so
you?
I don't block you. Good.
Okay.
You guys can start.
Is there a second?
I'll second for process, but then I'll abstain because I wasn't there.
Right. Well, I was there, but anyway, that'll do. So the
That'll do.
been made and seconded with no changes. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Great. All right. Gonna take everybody's any abstain? I mean, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I wasn't there. Thank
Nobody
you.
objects. All right. Well, we're fortunate to have Brian. What's your last name? Brian Heinrich
Yeah,
from
Brian Henrich.
Henrich. I'm sorry.
That's right.
From Puget Sound Energy here. Brian, I asked him to be prepared to give us some storm coverage analysis and also EV charging station capacity, maybe information. And so since the agenda's got you stuck right in there, let's just roll with it, Brian.
Great. Thank you. Brian Heinrich, Puget Sound Energy. Thank you for the invitation to talk to you all today. I do have a PowerPoint I think is going to come up here. We'll try and walk through this a little bit. But so I joined PSE in June of this year. I think many of you worked with my predecessor, Corinne Vandegrin, who's still with PSE. She just has a different territory. I come to PSE after just over 11 years as the deputy administrator with the city of Bellingham. So I'm familiar with some of the challenges of local government for sure, and very much in a learning mode for PSE. So if it works for you folks, you're welcome to interrupt as you have questions. I'll do my best to answer those. But why don't we go ahead and work through the next slide. So just quickly, the agenda for this morning. One of the things PSE does at nearly all our meetings is a safety moment. We'll get to that in a second. I want to talk a little bit about storm preparedness, infrastructure and readiness, customer resources, restoration of power, some things customers should know, and outage communications. Hopefully, some of you have already received some communications from me as storm season gets underway. Next slide, please. So, one thing, please share with anyone as you get calls about outages. If there's a downed line, stay away from it. Those should always be assumed that they are energized. Don't drive over them. And always call 911 if you come across a downed line. And there is a PSE number there on this slide, but for folks who might be listening, it's 888-225-5773. We take those pretty seriously, as you might imagine. Next slide, please. So storm preparedness, as I'm coming to learn, and certainly my time in Bellingham and Whatcom County, Whatcom and Island are often the recipient of the worst of the bad weather that comes through Western Washington. Not telling you folks anything you don't already know, but we do monitor and maintain 26,000 miles of on our electric grid across the territory. So we do have year-round storm preparedness that takes shape in the form of vegetation management, so trimming of trees, making sure there's not branches that are going to be a hazard falling into lines. Things like pole replacements, covered wire, so tree wire, it's a bit more durable. We are increasingly installing that across the territory. Some reliability projects, which I believe is of interest to folks on the island. And then for those of you that have like a water utility, SCADA breakers, that's something you're probably familiar with. That's a system that we used. I still say we when I'm talking about the city of Bellingham, so I apologize. It's something that Bellingham uses as well to understand where the breaks occur. And that's a system that helps us respond as quickly as possible when there is an outage. Next slide, please. So to give you a sense of the readiness in a storm event, we do have over 900 employees who have emergency response roles. We have the 7 regional storm bases that do manage local storm response. This is in the event of a significant storm. 24/7 on-call teams, we do have the ability to stand up an emergency coordination center. And then there's dedicated communications at those centers. And that's a role that I might find myself in and communicating with you folks.
You can plug in here if you want.
I don't think it's bothering anybody though.
Yeah. Just if you want to use the earphones.
Next slide, please. So this was something I did want to highlight because it's a question that's come up a number of times to me and to my colleagues is what's our process when we go to restore power? So from a transmission line perspective, it's the high voltage transmission line. So those are typically the top, if you look at a power pole, that's the top line. Those are the highest voltage. Substations, I think we all know what those look like. Those serve large numbers. And then the distribution lines are what you more readily see to a home and a business. Next slide, please. In the event of an outage, and you've all probably seen these trucks, I assume, you're gonna see the damage assessment, electrical first responders. We do work with Potelco. Those are our line workers. If you see a truck and it leaves, don't assume that we're just moving on. It could be that we need additional whether it's staffing or equipment. And that's, in those cases, the outage may take a little bit of extra time. Go ahead. Next slide, please. So one takeaway other than avoiding downlines that I hope folks have from this presentation is if you don't have the outage app on your phone, you should absolutely download. I think actually in another meeting when we were talking about this, so I think we absolutely download that. That's the best way to report an outage. It's updated in real time. It's what I use in my role in understanding where outages are. It's a great resource. You can pinpoint down to, in fact, you enter your own address or the address of your location, and it will tell you estimated repair time. So it's the My PSE app. It's available at the App Store if you're an iPhone user. I'm actually not aware of what the Android store, I think it might be called the same thing, the App Store for Androids. But anyway, it's available in both formats. There is the 800 number, 888 call PSE. And if after all of that, you still don't have power, continue to call. Folks will respond. But again, that app is the best resource, I think, that we have in terms of understanding where the outages are. Next slide, please. So I just reinforcing what I was just talking about, that's what it looks like from a screenshot perspective. It gives a tremendous amount of information when the outage occurred, the number of customers impacted. If we know the cause, it will come up there. And then the most recent update. So you get a sense of, how long have we known about this outage? What does our response look like? Next slide, please. So hopefully your emergency management folks have this same sort of message. I think it's pretty tried and true all the way from, you know, the state down to local municipalities. Develop an emergency preparedness kit. You know, in that there should be water, food, batteries, you know, everything you might need to manage for, I think conventional wisdom now is 72 hours. If you have a kit that can be larger than that, that is preferred. But there's a lot of resources out there. Again, your county emergency management folks probably have a really good list as well. I suspect this is something that folks in Island County are probably better than most in terms of that.
Ryan, this is Janet. Can I interrupt you just for a sec?
Yeah.
We often say you've been over here and presented a number of times on Camino Island, and we often say, please plan for a week, because that's not that uncommon in our winter weather. And so I just would encourage you to think about the fact that in our islands, those outages can last far more than 72 days, and to encourage the public to prepare for a week at least, simply because it happens every winter.
Yeah, I think you're right. Thank you for that feedback. I know before I left the city of Bellingham, some of the conversations we were having around emergency management were suggesting even, you know, up to 2 weeks.
Yes. That's what we do for earthquake preparedness is a minimum of 2 weeks.
Well, and you're going to have the same emergency kit for both of those. We tell our people that's 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. In case you can't get on or off the island.
That's right. And I do know, you know, one of the things, one of the challenges, not to get too far afield, but for some households, that can be a challenge. Mm-hmm. That preparation for 2 weeks. So
yep.
What does it look like from a greater emergency response? I know PSC's worked with, you know, like food banks in the past and things of that nature to help bridge that gap. So again, go back to safety and preparedness. The app is fantastic. As I've already said, we also have a PSC.com storm page. You know, we also know that in the event of an outage, you may not have internet service. So be mindful of that. Again, the app is a good one. If I know in my own kit at home, I have a charger that, you know, that you can charge in advance and, you know, buy yourself some extra hours for sure. That's a valuable one, so that I still have access via things like the app, via my smartphone in the event of an outage and I don't have, you know, Wi-Fi. We do coordinate with emergency responders. We've done that in a number of different scenarios. So whatever support they need, I don't know if folks tracked a couple of years ago, there was significant flooding in Whatcom County and PSC stood up an ECC there, even though the outages weren't maybe what you'd anticipate. The flooding was so severe that we coordinated with emergency response in that scenario. So just but one example of what that coordination looks like. Next slide. So there's my contact information. I hope most of you have that, certainly on some of the emails that were shared here. My number's there. Don't hesitate to call me really anytime. Shoot me an email if you have any questions. I'd be happy to try and answer any questions folks might have about storm response right now. And yeah, thank you.
So I was hoping we could follow up with a discussion about EV charging as well.
Happy to.
Yep. I don't know if you have a presentation or.
I don't. I don't have a presentation on EV charging.
Hang on a second. I guess. Yeah, Commissioner St. Clair. Yeah,
I apologize. Before we change topics, just for the record, the Puget Sound Energy doesn't serve all of Island County. So I just wanted to note that for Snohomish PUD, the website is reportoutage.snowpud.com and their number is 877-783-1000. We often have these presentations either at board meetings or in COG. And it's just a reminder that as much as I appreciate my partners at Puget Sound Energy, we have two partners in Island County.
Great. Thank you. Yes. Anyway, so I'd like to have a little discussion about EV charging and some other capacity, general capacity, at least on the islands. So let's start with EV charging. Do you, it seems to me, and I'll just start this off, and I'd love it if anybody weighs in, but it seems to me that we at the port have tried to see if we can access grant programs or whatever programs to do some electric charging. Like, for example, in our, we have a park and ride lot in Clinton, and we like to access that one. It's been a very difficult process. We're treated like a commercial customer, so the price and the function is quite a bit more difficult than, for example, I have several meters, and they're easy to act, to obtain, and you know you just get an electrician, get it set up, and PSC is very helpful. And we're not having that same experience with the Port of South Whidbey. Plus, I don't see a whole lot of off the main highway grant opportunities for EV. So maybe you could help enlighten me on some of that.
Yeah, I'll try. And I might ask if Mark wants to, not to put him on the spot, but I know City of Langley is early in a process on an EV charging program that PSC is offering. So I don't know if he wants to add anything to this conversation, but so couple of options right now around EV charging is, and I'd be curious to talk to you more maybe offline about what you want to achieve.
In but Clinton, yeah. It's...
Yeah. So we're very early in an EV charging program. There's sort of two options, I guess. One is that PSC owns and operates the charging equipment, installs it at their cost. You provide the location. The other is more of a cost share model where you pay, you basically buy the equipment and maintain it. There's pros and cons to both sides. I can send you some more information on that. So we're very early in that. There's also parallel to that, there's been a Commerce grant, State Department of Commerce grant for EV charging. So that might, if you haven't looked into that, you might look into that. And I think, again, not to put Mark on the spot, I believe that's what they were looking into, is what the possibilities were around the a Commerce grant to support the installation of those chargers. I think maybe a little bit of a side trip on the off-highway charging stations. I believe that's going to be a future installation. I think right now the effort is sort of where is the are the most people, the highest probability that they're going to use a charging station.
Right, which isn't the people you're sitting here talking to, unfortunately. I mean, we're not on the I-5 corridor going up Whidbey Island. Go ahead.
It doesn't make sense to me to do it in park and rides, because then one person is on it all day long while they're at work. And so they're not getting the turnover they would get in other locations.
Yeah, I think I can't defend other people, but I think it would be in an area that's really not used a lot. So if we could just have that as a charging station as opposed to part of the parking ride, it could either be used as one or it could just be there for folks. It's walkable to areas in Clinton. So we could set up a charging station because we have power there that's not being utilized, but it wouldn't necessarily be for somebody walking on the ferry. I don't know. It just seems to me that if we have a push, this major push toward electric vehicles by 2035, how are they going to visit here if there's nowhere to charge?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I think that is what both the PSC programs and the Commerce grants are trying to address.
So tell me about the PSC built, owned, and created charging stations where we just supply you with the area, the location, and you do the rest. Is that something that's actually occurred, or do you say you're kind of trying to?
We just walked it out, so it's a pretty new program, maybe a couple months in the rollout. And again, in fact, I could send everyone the relevant information. I can just send
you said it to me,
send it to
and
you.
Then I can send it.
I'll do that. Put you in touch with the right people who are managing that program. And yeah, that'd be the quickest way. I can say all that information's on our website. Be happy to send that to you.
Brian, what, in that instance where you own it and operate it, what equipment are you using? Or what brand are you using?
Oh, gosh. I don't know the brand. They're typically type 2 chargers, however, even
medium, medium level.
Is that medium level? Yeah, type 2 and type 3. Yeah. I don't know the brand off the top of my head.
Oh, Janet, were you, you're offline or you're muted, but were you trying to weigh in? No. All right.
No, I sent an email. I'm sorry, I didn't take my hand down. I sent an email that there is a commerce. They've established last year an EV strategy council, and they're trying to develop a statewide strategy for electrification. And I think it's important that we perhaps might want to weigh in on that. So I emailed all of you. I think I emailed all of you. Layla, you can check the contact information, because they are going to be focused, as we've said, on the major corridors. But what does that mean for those of us, quote unquote, off the beaten path? And how can we, especially for those of us who take millions of visitors a year onto our into our community. So I just wanted to share that information because somebody had mentioned a commerce grant.
These are really great questions. And I would agree with the commissioner. If you have an opportunity to weigh in on what commerce is planning, I would really encourage you to do that. Because I think part of the, and you addressed it just a minute ago, you know, you might have a park and ride that folks are using to walk or utilize another adjacent, you know, use. We think about, as it comes to EV charging, is you sort of, in many respects, you want to meet people where they're at. So if they're using a library, maybe that's a location. I've seen in Bellingham, at, you know, various shopping centers, the owners of those have privately put in their own chargers.
Well, and it happened 10 years ago when those grant opportunities were coming through. Owners put in charging stations. Right. We help with some of that. I mean, that's been going on for a long time. But and we're going to get to you, Mark, next. Okay. But when we brought up the park and ride, I'd rather we had plenty of stalls that were available at no charge other than what they have to pay for the electricity. So that, you know, there's got to be a way to get them to move on when they're done charging. But we haven't figured all of that out yet.
Keep charging
them. Oh, okay. All right.
Give them an hour break and then they start getting charged again, even if their battery's full.
Yeah. And they get charged at a higher rate, right, Molly?
I'm sorry, what?
I heard that they, if you overstay your welcome on a charging station, not only do they keep charging them, but they get charged at a higher rate after a certain period of time.
I'm not sure about that, Janet. I know we go back to charging them after an hour.
So I'm new to this, but it sounds like they've got your credit card. And if you stick around too long, you're going to get charged more. Thank you.
Typically how it works.
Mark, why don't you weigh in for a minute and tell us what you're doing in Langley, and then we'll get back around to this.
Yeah, sure. No problem. So just a few points. Yes, the Department of Commerce does have a charging grant out right now. It does close on the 1st. So if you haven't begun that process, there will be another round of funding. Langley does intend to participate in that round as well. With regard to the comments from Mayor Hughes regarding charging for an extended period of time, typically the type of chargers that you'll find in a park and ride situation would be the lower level 2 chargers, which do typically take 4 to 6 hours depending. So that is sort of the ideal situation for a commuting scenario. It would not be what you would typically start to see these days is known as the DC fast chargers, which are typically you could get an entire charge in about a half an hour to an hour. That's something that we're looking at here in Langley as well. So there are some opportunities out there. Like I said, the first one closes day after tomorrow. There is also, as mentioned, as Commissioner St. Clair mentioned, the EV charging or the EV council. And they do have a listserv that you can get on and monitor their meetings. That's been pretty helpful as well. And we are also looking at the PSC option, but haven't really explored that too far as we've been primarily focused on this. So I don't have a sense of the equipment either, but I am interested in learning more about that as well.
Great. Thank you, Mark.
I want to add one other thing that is a new program. And again, I'll send the link out for folks to look at is on-street pole charging. So where there are PSC poles, there would be a charger mounted high enough up that it hopefully avoids vandalism, things of that nature, but allows folks who are utilizing on-street parking to charge while we're there. So that's another, the idea being, again, meeting people where they're at. So if you're going to come to, you know, Coopville for a couple hours, if you want to charge up, you can do that.
So my problem with that one, Mark, is that... And we've had this conversation before. After the big fire in Maui, it became even more critical to the citizens. I heard more about it because the fire was exacerbated by the electric wires, the electric poles that fell. And we've been complaining about this to PSC for a long, long time about how we would really like our electric wires to be underground. And there was even a situation that happened, as you know, a couple months ago, where a pole fell down in Evie's Preserve and started a small grass fire. Happily, it was wet. It was there had been rain, and so there was just a line of black. There wasn't anything else. And I contacted your office. I contacted you and said, "What can you tell me about this? How did this happen?" And you said that nobody had any record of this happening. And so I contacted the Coopville Fire Marshal. And he told, you know, gave me the information. I forwarded that to you, and you were able to find it. I thought about that when you're showing your first couple slides, talking about all the, you know, how you guys keep records of everything and you know everything that's going on. So I just, again, wanted to reiterate my concern and unhappiness that we do not seem to be transitioning to a future in which we have our electric wires in some safer way than up high where the trees can fall down on them and they can start fires. Or the trees can fall down them in a storm and then people don't have any electricity and it's 20 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's not all nice with me right now about.
No, I understand.
And so when you say that we want to go and use these poles for people can charge their cars, well, I would love people to be able to charge their cars. I don't want to be charging on the poles. I want the poles to go away. So.
Nobody's hands up. I'm going to dive in here for a second. You know, I've been around here long enough. Janet, I think you said that part of Camino is covered by a PUD. Is that right?
Yes.
Right. So is that a nonprofit organization that runs the power service?
It's a public utility district. So right. It's not really a 501c3. It's like Mason County, Kitsap County. There's Whatcom County all have public utility districts. They're a little bit different under the UTC and how they're regulated, but they and they have elected officials. They're kind of quasi-governmental in that they have elected officials. That's their commissioners. So that's.
Yeah, I'm only bringing that up. I'm only bringing that up because. I know that PSC's in a unique situation, as is like Libby Telecom, where you've got a private company for profit, I believe, but it still has some control and regulation from the FCC.
UTC.
UTC, with Libby Tele, it was FCC or whatever. But so you're in that odd space where you need to make money for your stockholders, shareholders,
investors.
And is it a multinational corporation now?
It is.
So who is it owned by?
Oh gosh, the Australian investors primarily. I can get the name for you.
I'm just trying to get the concept down. Yeah. So undergrounding power. You know, I've been involved with that to a small extent in my life through construction. Is a very expensive process.
Correct.
And so what's it going to take when I'm not on either side of this, but what's it going to take where it would be enough value to PSE to start undergrounding more? I mean, I can see the main lines got to stay up in the, I mean, that's probably going to be way too expensive to get those down, but a lot of these other arterials, what's it going to take?
It's a good question. So maybe just to take a step back, on the UTC, which does regulate the utility, one of their central concerns is keeping rates, I don't want to say low, but the concept is that the ratepayers have to pay for those improvements. And so to your point about the expense of undergrounding, those costs then would be borne by the ratepayers. And so it's a fairly delicate operation, really, when you think about territory-wide, how those costs are leveled across the territory for ratepayers. So I just want to be, I hope that makes sense for folks, that the UTC, their directive is to ensure that those rates are not exorbitant, right? That one territory, say Whatcom County, cannot pay for improvements in Island County. Island County ratepayers cannot pay for improvements in Lewis County.
So it doesn't become a burden on one area for right. another, but to some sense, it probably still levels off a little bit, right? I mean, you have overall profit in the region.
What the short answer, I think, is yes, but it goes back to when those improvements are made, PSC has to make the case to the UTC, the general rate case, and through various tariffs in terms of how those improvements are going to be paid for. So to your comment, undergrounding is very expensive. It also requires a great deal of construction, which may result in removal of vegetation. You know, trees, I know that's sensitive across the territory. It's sensitive here. It's sensitive in Whatcom County as well.
And there's already so many utilities underground to work around. Every time we try to do something, it's like there's so much water, power, fiber, sewer. Especially in a historic town with narrower streets, it's really hard to find room to do this stuff.
That's an interesting question, Mayor, in terms of this whole dig once policy that's coming before the legislature, is if we're adding construction anywhere, shall we consider all of those different utilities that you mentioned and sheathe them in one dig once strategy?
Boy, that would be nice.
Yeah,
maybe tearing up roads once.
Maybe I don't want to put anyone on the spot, but I mean, doesn't Oak Harbor coordinate with all the various utilities when you do like a street improvement? I know City of Bellingham does,
because yeah, absolutely,
they're
yeah.
disruptive. It's expensive.
Yeah, and so. When we do major ones, we reach out to the other providers there to try to coordinate, but they don't always respond, and so Sipley kind of struggles with that sometimes, and some of the other ones, struggle with that. We just did West Whidbey, and we major renovations, so we coordinated there. Back to your EV issue too. We did get a grant a couple of years ago. I kind of coordinated with your predecessor for our police department. So we were looking for funding for upgrading. So because they'll go up obsolete, we had some obsolete ones. And so we actually just applied for our own LTAC funding and kind of used LTAC funding to pay for.
What's LTAC?
Lodging tax.
Oh, that 2%. Yeah.
That's an interesting idea, Blaine, because if when I think about bringing visitors on, and you know, we've gotten emails wanting more corporate or not corporate, public charging stations, is that an interesting thing that the Economic Development Council or local municipalities could apply for, to because it does bring heads and beds to have charging stations? That's interesting.
That was our nexus to using. So thank you very much, because you do have to have a justification for it. But we were looking for funding, and we had a couple of years where they just didn't work and had a lot of complaints on them. And we just didn't really think it was proper to use general fund funding. That's very scarce.
Has the county or Oak Harbor gone towards, is any of your fleet electric yet?
No, we're looking in it. Into it. We need to get our public works doesn't have an access. Interesting enough, they applied for the same time our police department, and PSC liked our police department more than they did public works, and that's where the priority went.
The county.
So kind of an interesting.
We have plans for it, but we don't have any EV charging.
Yes. Yes, we do. We have three over here on Camino.
Excuse me.
And those are not public. Those are meant for fleet. And that's a question I had for, you know, us as government officials, is how do we balance these grants and opportunities to put in charging stations, and whether we make them public versus make them part of our process to electrify our own fleets. And the three charging stations over here, which were part of a grant that Ryan got, Ryan Beach, our facilities director, all are meant at this point in time are meant for fleet cars. And I'm not sure this has been formally adopted yet, but this has been conversation. So I apologize, Commissioner Bacon. I just heard this briefing recently, informally, so I don't think there's been a formal decision made, but the need for electrification of our fleet and charging stations, we can't compete and make those public with public folks who want to use them. How do we balance that in government, that the public wants them and we need them for our fleets? Mayor, you're ahead of the game on this. How are you balancing that?
Well, Mayor, I don't have to balance it yet, because I don't have any ones for fleet. Ours are all public. So,
okay.
And I was asking the question because with the supposed rule that we all be electric by 2035, again, living on an island, I don't want all of our public works fleet to be electric.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't have power for a week, I need to have public works trucks that can work. So, I mean, that's going to be a balance too.
At the very least, hybrid, right? I mean,
yeah, that's true.
Or hydrogen.
You can do your own generator.
Well, and the same thing applies if we go to hydrogen in our public works vehicles, right? We don't have access to clean. We don't have access to any hydrogen in a cost-effective way. That's another way.
At our next meeting, he can fill us in on that. Okay.
Yeah, that is another.
It's not a joke. We'll ask him.
Who's going to talk about that?
Island Transit.
We're going to hydrogen buses.
I thought you said Scott.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Scott. Yeah, and this is a great topic, because I mean, they have this. I would assume that they have the same mindset that you have, Molly. It's, we got a lot of distance to a lot of places. We're not always going to be able to charge efficiently, even if we had a lot of charging stations. And Todd, I wasn't here during his presentation, but they're going to go toward hydrogen as opposed to electric buses. And
no, we're doing both. We're doing both, Kurt.
Okay, good. You're on that board too, I'll bet.
Yeah. We're doing both. We're doing both. The cutaway buses, the short ones, we're doing both electric and hydrogen. Camino will be all electric, and Whidbey will be a combination of hydrogen buses and electric buses.
So since you've got such a grasp on this, where are you storing that or acquiring the hydrogen from?
So that's a great question. We're going to have to purchase it and store it on site at Island Transit. Melanie, jump in here if you think I get any of this wrong. Chehalis, the port of Chehalis, and I think there's also a port over on the peninsula that they've taken state investments from CURB and other places to build hydrogen plants. The challenge in the climate change conversation is there's clean hydrogen or green hydrogen, and then the hydrogen production itself isn't the most climate friendly process. So several of our state legislators have been researching, and some have traveled. You can ask them this if and when we have our state legislative meeting. I can't remember. I've been gone. But they're traveling to look at other countries and places where they're building green hydrogen plants, which are pure, so that the hydrogen, because the emissions is just water vapor. So that's exciting. But the production of hydrogen can be a little bit dirty. There's a few places in Western Washington, and they will distribute out, and we'll have to probably purchase and store it in our Whidbey transit station.
in deciding to go to hydrogen, the would-be transit is kind of taking a leap of faith, because there is not the hydrogen producers for us to utilize. But we believe that by the time we have our buses, there'll be more places for us to get the hydrogen.
Okay.
Yeah, it exists at Chehalis. The Port of Chehalis already has an active plant. And I think there's another active plant out in Wenatchee, because Link already has hydrogen buses. And I think there's one out on the Olympic Peninsula, but I can't remember where. And my brain is
exciting.
Well, yeah. And then there would need to be storage at the new facility if they build it.
That's right. That's right.
Ken's Corner or wherever they decide to. Yeah, I'm sure Brian is probably relieved that we took him out of the hot seat for a minute. But I want to put him back in it. The federal government gave Washington State Ferries $5 million grant to get an interlocal going with PSE to start the design for electrification at the Clinton dock. Do you know anything about that?
No, I don't know anything about that.
Oh, come on. Nothing?
I really don't.
All right.
I'm only aware of Whatcom County has been talking about they have their own ferry that serves Lummi Island. There's a interest in electrifying that route. I believe the Guaymas Ferry in Skagit is also going to be electrified, but I'm not familiar with the DOT grant.
Yeah, well, and the thing about the timeline has changed dramatically on the projections at Clinton. I mean, it was going to be the first, and it was 2024. Well, that isn't happening. Then it moved to 2027, and I think the last I heard it might be 2029. But I know that there was an announcement of the funding, and I just wondered what that design means. In other words,
a long extension cord.
Beg your pardon?
A very long extension cord to Everett.
So does all the power come into Clinton, come down the island?
Oh, gosh. I believe there's two ways onto the island. One's at Clinton, one's across to Severn Pass. So there's north and south.
So there's something laying under the Puget Sound that goes.
I believe that's the case. I double check that, but I'm pretty sure that's the case.
That'd be really interesting to know. I mean, more and more after COVID, I think most of us are realizing just how removed we are on this island. It's changed so much. The reliability of Washington State Ferries and freight movement and all kinds of things just has changed a lot. And it'd be interesting to know what we're facing, because we have to have our own disaster preparedness as well, right? And we've got these darn faults laying under Clinton but anyway, I guess I'm digressing. That was one of the things I was going to hit you with and hope that you had some information, but I understand I'll certainly follow up on it. It's probably early. Yeah. Okay. Well, great. So are there more questions for Brian or discussion about PSE?
I have a question.
Go for it, David.
Going back to your presentation, Brian, I'm wondering where your storm bases are. What's the closest one to Whidbey Island?
That's a good question. I want to say in the event of a storm, it would be at the Skagit Service Center, which is in Burlington. But let me double check that. I know in some of you probably know better than I do that I believe we've set up at least information information centers at the Goose Market, I believe it's called.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
but I don't believe that's an official center, but I believe we've sort of triaged out of there.
So
but
let me appreciated
double,
it.
Yeah, thank you. Let me double check that. I believe it's the Burlington Service Center, or the Skagit Service Center rather, in Burlington.
So
my other question would be whether or not your short presentation would be available to all of us to pass along to our staffs and other board members.
Yes, absolutely.
Layla will send that out, so you'll have a copy.
It was in our invitation today. I think I have it up. Brian, just as a complaint, we had a really wonderful Puget Sound Service Center down on South Whidbey, And I was disappointed when it was closed. It was a place where people could walk in and get information. It made us feel like Puget Sound was invested in our communities. We often had meetings there. And I would offer that closing that service center down, I think it was just south of Freeland, sent a message from my perspective about the investment in our community. So setting up a storm response center, setting up a place where we know we can walk in the door to get a response from Puget Sound Energy would be appreciated. I was disappointed when that was closed.
Yeah, thank you for that feedback. I don't recall the particulars around that. It happened before my time, but that's something. That's something I'll follow up on and see just what the thinking is, and I'll get back.
Short story. There was always a PSE center on South Webby. It was in Langley when I was like a kid 60 years ago, and you could go pay your bill and you could talk to real people, and you know, and so that continued on, and it looked like it was going to be threatened. And then there was a push for a PUD on Whidbey Island, and it was a pretty elaborate effort. And as part of that, at least this is my feeling, is that PSE had a little heightened awareness and wanted to keep a little more community input and involvement, and they left that open for a while, but then that only lasted so long, and now it's gone. There's a story. That's the last 60 years anyway.
Okay, so I want to have a good story because it's recent. I was out in that nightmare of a windstorm two Fridays ago, which no one should have been out in. I was out in it for 2 hours from Clinton to Coopville, Green Bank, residential streets all over the place. And you guys had been out just a lot in October, cutting vegetation. I had seen you all over cutting vegetation. There were trees down. There was branches down. There were wires down, not power wires, but, you know, cable wires and other kinds of stuff. It was a nightmare out there. And people didn't, I was dropping people off and I kept expecting, like, I'm going to take these people home because they're not going to have power. And they all had power. And there was very few places that lost power that night, and it came back on really quickly. And I really thought that was when I saw how much stuff was down. I thought of how much worse it could have been had you not done all that vegetation work the month before.
Thank you. Let's end there.
Beg your pardon?
I'm kidding. I said let's end there.
Okay. I'm going to pitch. You brought up the fire that occurred that nobody knew occurred. I think that wire that you're talking about that's coated.
The tree wire.
Right. Mm-hmm. Unless, you know, it's going to have less of a tendency to have that happen, isn't it? I mean, if it hits the ground, isn't going to be quite as likely to spark if it hits the ground wire, hits one of the...
Less likely to break.
Oh, okay.
And avoid that situation.
But it's not coated or anything.
It is coated, yeah.
Okay. So at least that would be a start.
Yeah, that'd be a start.
I mean, and I guess you contact UTC? I'm just saying, I'll bet you the UTC responds to comments from the public, and then your company comes in and renegotiates rates. And I'm just guessing, but I'm thinking that if there was a comment, it should start with these guys. You don't get what you want. You would ask the UTC if there was a way they could negotiate.
That is generally how it works. We take our rate cases and our tariffs to UTC for their approval. Tree wire is more expensive. That's part of our management process, though, is wanting to go more towards tree wire. This is more
expensive. And I'm just thinking of a way to make that point. How do we help make that point? Okay. Thank you, Brian. And if nobody else has anything for Brian, we'll get him completely out of the hot seat.
I have one more.
There's more. Go ahead, Janet.
All right. Not surprising, right? When we talked about undergrounding wire, that's a priority on both islands. And one of the challenges that, and I think, Brian, you and I had this conversation when we met a few weeks ago, and I've had it with Snowpud, is the right-of-way. It's the same challenge we have in county government when we're talking about roads and other things. And the undergrounding wire requires us to have or acquire right of way. And in our weird county where our right of way can be 18 inches to 18 feet, it's hard to get consistent contiguous right of way for undergrounding any utilities. So I just, because we'd had that conversation, I think Brian, you and I as well, I've had it in other places. I just wanted that as a point of reference wherever we can. I hope that Puget Sound Energy will join us in undergrounding, but we do understand both the UTC rate question and the expense, as well as the complexity of the dang right-of-ways we have in our islands.
All right, Janet, we're going to end that with this conversation with you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks,
really appreciate it. Okay, we've got a couple of things here. Other items of mutual interest, I'll let you guys start. Yeah.
I'll start.
I'm going to bring it up. Go ahead, David.
Beginning yesterday and starting today again, the substructure work at the Coopville Wharf is being undertaken and will probably be complete by the end of December.
Wow. Great.
If you were to look over this shoulder in a real picture, there'd be a great big barge there with a crane. And so they're getting ready to drive some piles and agitate some piles and put some jackets around old piles. So that's an exciting thing. It's taken 4 years to get that project underway, thanks to permitting and other situations. But we are finally underway. So I want to thank the county. I want to thank the county for helping with that project through 0.09 money, and the state through historic money as well. So it's definitely a partnership, and it'll be good for everybody. Thanks.
Congratulations, David. It was a lot of hard work. Nothing good comes easy.
No.
I took a gorgeous picture of your crane this morning, David. There's probably going to be lots of pictures of it. It looks really
good. Yeah, cool. I took a bunch yesterday. So
That's big news. I just showed Blaney. He wasn't overly impressed because he said they have cranes all the time. Yeah. I said that's.
Yeah, sure. More items of mutual interest. Anybody?
I'll just bring up legislative priorities. We added public records, given the input here, to our individual city priorities there. One of the other things we ordered that probably wasn't discussed was tort reform. I serve on the WCIA board and legislative committee, and there's a lot of bills out there that want to increase our insurance rates, and they're already pretty expensive. So the issue that we have is if they do it all the lawsuits, then we're going to turn around and it'll stop some of our operating issues. And so we don't want to have to divert funds away from our programs to insurance. So then we talked about recruit and retain responders, revised property tax gap. That my finance director has as a priority there. So we've been on that 1% for a long time. So, and this year, I think they used a substitute for the CPI. I can't remember the acronym it is, but it was a lot higher than 1% this year. And we only could do the 1%. And certainly we support NASA Whidbey Island. And then public rec, I talked about that. Housing affordability, I think we all have that in common. And then invest in your community is kind of the area there. And so we're certainly looking for funding for our marina, state route SR20, and Washington State Ferries is on our list. So,
thank you.
Yeah, great. That's cool. Anybody else?
So this week, the public comment on the statewide planning for the $1.2 billion, $1.3 billion coming to Washington State for broadband was due. Some of you are on the broadband action team, so you got a copy of the public comments we submitted. They are the important pieces. They are requiring and focusing on established mapping that determines the served project areas that will be funded by the federal government in the future. We had some comments about that, and we're just trying to get ready for the next round of funding. It will help expand where we had the mid-mile from WIDBTEL, the ports project in Central WIDB, and all of that. As an interesting side comment that came out during the convenings that I had with stakeholders on that was the importance of where the employees of key anchor institutions live, because as Brian said, often they need to have access to the internet in an emergency. And so I've had Snohomish County and other counties say, hey, my folks live on Kamehameha. We need you to have broadband, because if we can't get to them in an earthquake, we need to be able to get to them by internet. And so there's an interesting conversation about hospital employees, public works employees, first responders, and where they live and access to the internet, so that in a natural disaster or a public emergency, we can actually reach out to the people who need to be able to respond to that.
And so to pile on to that, Janet, we've been fortunate on South WIBE with WIBE Telecom that as long as you have power at your house, their internet works. And that's not the case with all internet services. So
that's right.
Something to consider as well.
Or if you even have internet service. So if you have an employee that lives off Sunrise and over here, or you have an employee that lives up on North WIDBY, there are places where they have nothing but cell service. And we all know how good our cell service is on North WIDBY.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to share that. If anybody wants a copy of that or to see it, please reach out to me. Blaine, you got it. And I think, Molly, you got it because you're on the BAT mailing list.
Thank you, Janet. Is there more? I got a little bit. Let's talk about the Council of Governments and the chair position and election of officers. I intend to, there won't be a meeting in December, as we discussed, and then I intend to Zoom in January because I won't be in town. I can set up a program, and I'm willing to do that for January, but I would expect that we're going to have an election of officers then, or, you know, we could have had it today. We didn't put it on the agenda. So I'm not sure you want to, but we go through this every year, folks. So let's figure it out. It's not a fun thing to do, as you said so clearly, Molly, a year ago, but it is what it is. And we need to keep it going. So do you want to wait until January and we'll just do the officers January? I'll have a program set up and then IRTPO will do the same thing then.
Wait, what do you mean? Do we have people that have agreed to run or?
Well, no. Has that ever happened before? It's almost like the last person standing.
We're going to discuss it and then.
Do you want to discuss it now?
Elect people who aren't here, like I believe we did for you, maybe.
Yeah, I think it was close to that.
I think we nominate the new mayor of Langley because she isn't. No.
She's names up there. She could speak, I suppose, if we
agree with Kurt, though. I think this is, we've got an IRTPO meeting, and I think this is a conversation for the January 24th meeting.
Okay, so we just need to elect a chair and vice chair. Is that correct? Just those two positions. Yeah. Okay.
All right, we'll just do it then. Sure. Push it down.
How about a call out that if anybody's interested, please contact Kurt.
There you go. I love it. I'm sure my phone's just going to start ringing off the hook.
You okay, did.
So if
Kurt, thank you. You've done a great job.
If there isn't any more items of mutual interest, this meeting's adjourned. Thank you.
Thanks, Kurt, for your work.
Sure.